WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Thursday. It is March 2nd, 2017, and we have a ton of college basketball to talk about on today's show. It was a pretty wild night, especially in the world of Big Ten men's basketball. We, of course, will talk about the Michigan State men's basketball team falling on the road to the Fighting Illini. That's right, Illinois coming up with a big win over the Spartans. We'll chat about that. We will also, of course, recap the Northwestern and Michigan men's basketball game, which ended in absolute pandemonium. The court was rushed. I mean, Evanston, it just looked just crazy down there. All right, so we'll talk about that. We will also dive into a certain investigation that is centered on now the former head football coach for the Western Michigan football team. That's right, P.J. Fleck, under investigation we'll explain. I don't want to ruin it right now, okay? So stick around for that, and we will invite Deshaun Tate, our dear friend, to the show. Of course, Tate is a college basketball producer, reporter, and host at CBS Radio down in the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. He follows all things college basketball. We will take a look at the big picture scene of college men's basketball as, of course, we are just days away now from the postseason embarking in that sport. And on the back end of the show, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you. What exactly happened on this particular date in sports history? And a quick recap of the Detroit Pistons. 2 days ago, they topped the Portland Trailblazers in overtime. But not a great outcome for the Pistons against the New Orleans Pelicans. So we'll recap that. Phone lines are open. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. As you just heard, it's a loaded, packed show. So let's get right to it, starting with your current sports quick hit headliners. The Michigan State men's basketball team went to Champaign for a Big Ten battle against Illinois, the Fighting Illini. Yeah, and the Spartans came up just a bit short. Illinois made 11 threes on its way to a 73-70 dub over the Spartans.
I'm disappointed in the way we played. Give credit to Illinois. I thought they played pretty well. But when you shoot 48, 38, and 80 from the line and out-rebound a team by seven, you know, we let Black, he's got five career threes. He goes 3 for 5 tonight. We made some plays defensively where we just gave up shots. We didn't cut out on a free throw. They got a three off that. They ran it on a bounce play that we knew what they were running. They got a three off of that. It was not the focus that it needs to win on the road against a good team. And there's no question Illinois is a good, experienced team.
Yeah, Tom Izzo on the loss there. The Illini victory extended the winning streak to 4 games for Illinois and improved their record to 18-12, 8-9 in conference play. Meanwhile, the Spartans' loss puts their record at 18-12 as well. But Michigan State is 10-7 in the Big Ten, and each team has one regular season game left before the Big Ten conference tourney begins next week. All right, pandemonium erupted inside Welsh Ryan Arena last night after shades of Christian Laettner allowed Northwestern to top Michigan on a full-court inbound pass that led to a layup at the horn. The Wildcats' 67-65 victory over the Wolverines gave them their 21st win of the season and all but puts them into the NCAA tournament for the first time in program history. Go Cats, right? Meanwhile, the loss drops Michigan to 19-11 on the year. Currently, ESPN bracketologist Joe Lunardi has Michigan in the tournament as a 9 seed facing South Carolina, who you may recall defeated Michigan in an early season contest 61-46. We'll talk bracketology later on in the hour. Don't miss that. The 2017 Big Ten Women's Basketball Tournament is underway. down in Indy. The 6-seed Spartans taking on 11-seed Wisconsin. Tip-off set for 9 p.m. This will only be the third ever matchup between the two teams in the Big Ten tourney and first time since 2009. In that 09 game, the Spartans dropped 56 to 50 as the number 2 seed in the quarterfinals after a first-round bye. Again, the Big Ten tournament is currently underway. I believe Northwestern and Iowa are playing right now. We'll try to keep you updated on that and so much more throughout the hour. Former Michigan State defensive end Cassius Pete told 24/7 Sports earlier today that he plans on enrolling at Michigan State this summer to play for the team next year. Pete originally signed with Michigan State in 2015 and redshirted during his first year on campus before leaving the team in 2016 due to a family and academic issue. Now, at that time, he transferred to Pima Community College in Arizona. The return of Pete bolsters the defensive line unit that was extremely young a year ago. Minnesota head football coach P.J. Fleck, formerly of Western Michigan University, may be in some hot water already, as it was announced that he is under investigation for a potential violation of NCAA rules, according to Andy Pepper of WWMT-TV in Kalamazoo. Now, the report says that Western Michigan officials contacted Minnesota in regards to Fleck's alleged contact with current WMU players, including linebacker Robert Spillane, who was recently granted a release from the Broncos football squad. We'll have more on that said investigation in just a moment. In wake of a series of allegations against former Michigan State University and USA Gymnastics team Dr. Larry Nassar, Michigan State University has tightened requirements at its medical clinics, specifically in terms of the use of chaperones and obtaining, quote, informed consent, end quote, from patients. Now, according to Julie Mick of MLive, the changes address procedures that involved, of course, vaginal or rectal penetration, treatments that Nassar used for years until he was fired last September. Under these changes, doctors performing those treatments must use gloves and get written informed consent from the patient and, in case of minors, their parents. The policies approved on February 23rd will be effective on April 15th. The Detroit Pistons traveled to the Big Easy to take on the New Orleans Pelicans last night. I know our engineer Isaac is feeling good about this one. The Pistons were down 6 near the end of the third quarter when Andre Drummond and Pelicans guard Tim Frazier got tangled up fighting for a rebound. Then Andre Drummond swatted at the back of Frazier's head and was assessed a flagrant 2 foul, which is an automatic kaput ejection. Now, the Pelicans went on to win 109-86. Drummond finished with 13 points, 17 boards, but he was 1 of 10 from the free throw line. Drummond, you got to get better at the charity stripe, dude. Anthony Davis paced New Orleans with 33 points, hauled in 14 rebounds, and, of course, Boogie Cousins, DeMarcus Cousins, was not active for that game due to, of course, being suspended as he hits the threshold for technical fouls in the league. With spring training underway, the Detroit Tigers already have 2 pitchers that have been placed on the injury report. Left-hander Justin Wilson and closer Francisco Rodriguez, K-Rod, both have sore hamstrings. Neither situation is too concerning, but K-Rod is heading to AZ to participate in the World Baseball Classic for his native country of Venezuela. Now, manager Brad Ausmus said they may test K-Rod on Saturday before he leaves for the WBC. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in to be a part of the show, you know that number. Probably got it on speed dial, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to Facebook.com/currentsports, where we are currently live streaming the show. You can even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. It's about that time to get this party started.
Catch the finish! Oh! with the bucket to win it for the Wildcats and start a dance on March 1.
Derek, I know it's a lot of relief going on right now. Tell me how you feel.
I feel great. Words can't explain how we feel right now. It's a great win for the program. We know we need to win this game. We told ourselves we're going to die before we lose this game. I feel like we fought this game.
Yes, sir, baby.
Take me through the last play. How did it evolve to where you got one-on-one with one of the Michigan guards underneath the bucket?
So one of our assistant coaches, Coach James, he told me to set a double screen for Scott and B-Mac, and then he said slip, and Nate was going to throw the ball up to me. He said, in so many words, catch the ball and score. So that's what I did.
Well, go enjoy it with your teammates. Congratulations, big fella. Great finish.
Thank you.
Yes, that is how we start this. Oh, I was about to say Monday. Oh, boy, no, it's Thursday. We are just a day away from the weekend. Pardon me there. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. What a night. What a night. What a night it was. I know many Michigan fans out there are feeling a bit ugh right now. After what took place last night out in Evanston, Illinois, it was a crazy night out in Illinois with, of course, that buzzer-beating layup that broke the hearts of Michigan fans everywhere. Northwestern getting a huge win. And then, of course, moments after that, Michigan State took on Illinois. Michigan State falling. So two Michigan college basketball teams falling out in Illinois last night. Not a great night for Michigan State and Michigan, but what a play. Score tied, 1.7 seconds left on the clock. Nathan Taphorn throws the ball the length of the court, looked like Dan Marino. And then you had Derek Parton, hit the layup before the buzzer to give Northwestern an incredible 67-65 win over Michigan. I mean, social media absolutely blew up. When that ball sailed through the net, I couldn't believe it. Could not believe it. I was all set to watch at least one extra stanza between those two teams. A great game, a thrilling finish, fans rushing the court, as they should in a moment like that. Because a win over Michigan, in that type of fashion, a Michigan team that is coming off a big win against what I believe to be the Big Ten's best team in Purdue. And Northwestern gets a win like that, a quality win like that, that all but puts the Wildcats in the Big Dance for the first time in school history. Insane, right? Can't believe I'm saying that. NU, an NCAA tourney, doesn't even sound right coming off the tongue. The Wildcats, 21-9, 10-7 in the Big Ten. Set a program record for wins and move closer to that ever-elusive tourney bid. Great finish. John Beilein, Michigan head coach. Beilein commented after the win that, quote, he's a pretty good jumper. Pretty good jumper in regards to Parton catching that basketball and putting it up and in. Went on to say, quote, you do everything you can, but it was a perfect throw. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I must say that. I mean, I've seen the play about 10 times now. and it's like the stars just aligned. It's like a scene from a movie, right? Full length of the court, and the pass was on the money. Oh, boy, it's got to be sickening, though, because, you know, you look at that play, and Beilein and Michigan are being a bit criticized for how they defended that play. Without a doubt, I mean, Isaac just told me in my ear a minute ago that our dear friend and caller, Ray, who is a notorious maize and blue hater, says that John Beilein messed that game up for him. And that's all I saw on social media last night from maize and blue fans. John Beilein, what are you doing? How could you not guard something like that? I really think you're grasping at straws when you make that argument, because Michigan put itself in that position. And I don't think that Michigan should have been in a position for that play to even take place. It was a sloppy play down the stretch of that game. Got to give credit to Vic Law, who scored 18 for Northwestern. He was great last night. Also, Bryant McIntosh added 13, 5 assists. The Wildcats matching their highest conference win total. Get this. You got to go all – talk about a throwback Thursday for you. You got to go all the way back for this. The Wildcats matching their highest conference win total since the 1932-33 team that tied for the Big Ten championship. Wow. Derek Walton started off like a moving train, really slow before picking it up as the game went along. He finished with 15 for Michigan, which it's at again, 19-11, 9-8. Walton was great from deep, 4 of 8 from the three-point line. Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman finished with 13 points. Zach Irvin, 12. Moritz Wagner, he grabbed 10 rebounds. But the Wolverines took the L after coming in red hot, winning 5 of their last 6 games. And now Northwestern gets a dub. And I do believe this puts them in the tourney, at least for now. Yeah, if you look at how things shape up here, I'm looking at Bracketology with Joe Lunardi. I'm looking at his bracket right now. And it's very interesting because you look at how things have stacked up so far. You know, he has actually both Michigan State and Michigan as a 9 seed in the NCAA tourney. He has Michigan State. If things were to end today, this is how Joe Lunardi's bracket would look. Michigan State playing Miami, 8-9 matchup out in Buffalo, coming out of the East region. He has right now, as far as the Wolverines are concerned, Michigan again, he has them as a 9 seed, taking on South Carolina as the 8 seed, playing out in Tulsa, coming out of the Midwest region of the bracket. And get this, yes, he has the Northwestern Wildcats as a 9 seed, playing Virginia Tech as the 8 seed out in Salt Lake City in the West Division. How cool is that? Very cool. And as we talk about Northwestern's men's basketball team, the women are underway right now. Big Ten tournament. Susie Merchant and the Michigan State Spartans will play later tonight. Looking forward to that one. That game will be broadcast, of course, on the Big Ten Network. Approximately 8:55 p.m., Michigan State will play Wisconsin later tonight. So that should be an exciting matchup for sure. Looking forward to that one. I think that Susie's team already is in the NCAA tournament. Both Northwestern men and women are having a pretty solid year. Let's talk about the Michigan State men's basketball team, though. Want to transition to that game because, again, if things were to end today, I think Michigan State has already done enough to put itself in the NCAA tourney. But it's all about momentum. And again, it's hard to say that right now because, again, we're just kind of throwing things at the wall and just guessing. It's a guessing game right now, right? I still believe that Michigan State has to at least get one more win to solidify and really etch it in stone that they deserve to be in the NCAA tournament for the program's 20th straight time, the third longest streak in college basketball. Tom Izzo, the Hall of Famer, But you look at how last night's game went. And again, you know, I had said, and again, you know, predictions, you know, Isaac, you predicted, I believe, yourself, as well as, who do we have in as a PA yesterday? I'm getting old, man.
Boy.
Connor Clark.
That's it.
Connor Clark was in yesterday as well, and I asked you guys to give a prediction. I think you both chose Michigan State, but I had said after the year, I didn't even give a prediction if you look back at the tape.
Because, I remember. You know, predictions, smart play.
Yeah, smart play, right? But you know, after I got off the air, I talked with Brad Walker and I talked with Connor after, and I said, you know what, I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan State won, but I wouldn't be surprised if they lost. Because it's been like that all year. You just can't really get a solid read on this team. I mean, trying to look into a crystal ball and say, oh, Michigan State's going to come out and do this, this, and that. We really don't know. I mean, because this team has been so topsy-turvy every single year. But what I did say, though, is that Michigan State needed to have a better performance from Alvin Ellis III. I think that we needed to see a lot of bow and arrows last night. And we, I must say, you know, Alvin started off slow in that game. He had a tall task in trying to guard Illinois' best player. And Malcolm Hill, who was so talented, so talented. And some of those shots, you look at Malcolm, you know, looking at his stat line, I mean, Hill finished with 22 points. 6 of 16 from the floor. Yeah, that's what Malcolm does. And it was good defense. If you look at that game, I mean, there were a lot of shots that Malcolm took where hands right in his grill. Just didn't faze him. And he's such a patient player. That's what really makes Malcolm Hill special, I think. I mean, he's not going to force a lot. You know, he plays within the rhythm of the game. 22 points for him. Alvin had a tall order in trying to slow downhill. But, you know, it didn't take away from the game of Ellis last night. You know, he played 35 minutes, 6 of 10 from the floor, 15 points for the team, second leading scorer for the team. And if you look at the situational buckets that came from Ellis, they came when Illinois was on verge of really blowing up the game. Every time you saw Illinois try to make a nice little run here and there, Alvin would come up and say, not so fast. And he would knock down a three-pointer. Or he would hit a jumper. How about Miles Bridges with a layup? End of the second half. End of the first half. Miles Bridges hits a layup. Alvin with the heads-up play steals the basketball, goes up, and knocks in a layup of his own right before the buzzer sounds, and he just drops off to the locker room. That's how it's done. I mean, he was gritty last night. I thought he played solid. And Izzo has been experimenting with Ellis as a starter. It's not fared well two, three games prior to last night's. But he had a great game last night, I thought. Miles Bridges just is showing NBA scouts the entire toy chest right now. Hey, I can do this. I can also do that. I mean, my gosh. You know, what really amazes me, we all know that Miles can score. But his defense is getting better and better as well. He's got the body of an NBA player already. And how about, you guys know the play I'm about to talk about. You know, where he's on the right baseline. He spins off a defender when he sees a double team approaching. Goes up. Hangs up in the air. Does his taxes. Sips some coffee. Goes on the other side of the rim. And throws up a sick reverse layup. It was unbelievable. Hits the glass and goes in. It looked like a Michael Jordan move from the 80s. I tweeted that out last night. It was just a sexy move. And, you know, looking at some tweets of those who were in the house for that game, we had Chris Olari of the Detroit Free Press on the show yesterday. And Chris tweeted out, wow, all I heard was oohs and ahs from the Orange Crush crowd when that ball went through the hoop. Miles Bridges is going to do what he does. But it's about the other production for the team. And, again, an old problem bit Michigan State in the rear end last night. Turnovers. A sloppy game for Michigan State. It's been a problem all year for the team. Michigan State finished with 15 team turnovers. The bulk of those turnovers occurred in the first half, but we saw some bad ones. And again, situational turnovers. You know, I mean, when Michigan State needs to make a run, you know, what happens? Cassius Winston tries to throw up an assist that hits the, you know, that really, it almost looked like it was going to go over the backboard. I'm sitting there just kind of scratching my head like, huh? You know, Josh Langford, who had been great as of late heading into that game, you know, he contributed 4 turnovers. At one point, he had more turnovers than points. He finished with 7 points, But my goodness, you can't. That can't happen. Can't happen. Nick Ward, you know, 11 points, 3 of 5 from the floor. He's still trying to figure out how to play within the game to not get himself into early foul trouble. I thought he did a reasonable job last night when it came to that area. 3 personal fouls for him. But sloppy play is what costed Michigan State this game. They hung in there, though. You got to give them credit because, you know, you look at, you know, certain runs in that game. Michigan State was able to battle back. They did not give up. And I think that was encouraging to a certain degree. But it's a different ball game when you play on the road in the Big Ten. It's a different ball game when you do not have the Izzone to help with that momentum. That's when your leaders have to step up and be leaders. And sloppy play eventually led to the demise of the Michigan State men's basketball team. So now you look at the schedule. This team has Maryland coming up on the docket. Melo Trimble, you know, as far as Maryland goes, and I do agree with Chris what he had to say on yesterday's show. I think Maryland is coming a bit back down to earth now. But, you know, Melo Trimble is still Melo Trimble, one of the best players in the Big Ten Conference. That team is going to go as far as Trimble takes them. That's going to be a tough game. That's also on the road. You know, the Terps are going to try to finish out the year with a bang there. I believe that's Maryland senior night, if I'm not mistaken. It's always tough playing on an opposition senior night as well because emotions are high. They want to win because, you know, the seniors want to win because it's their last time on the basketball court. There was a lot of emotion in that room out in Champaign for the Fighting Illini, especially for Malcolm Hill. I don't know if you guys saw his post-game interview with the Big Ten Network, but the tears were a-flowing, especially when talking about the Illinois community and talking about his mom. His mom was in the crowd. By the way, I love Malcolm Hill's mom. She's so into the game. I love that. I love seeing moms just so in tune with the game, living and dying by every possession. Absolutely love that. Malcolm Hill, he's going to have a bright future for sure. And this is probably going to be the first time that we finally see Malcolm Hill play an NCAA tourney game. Correct me if I'm wrong, Isaac, on this. I want to double check on this, but I believe Illinois has not made the tourney In four seasons. It's been that long. So you talk about, you know, two teams in the state of Illinois. Northwestern, which has not gone to a tournament ever. And then Illinois, not making the tourney in 4 seasons. This is a good year for that state, without a doubt. So when it comes to Joe Lunardi in relation to the Illini, Lunardi's bracket, Illinois sits as one of the first four outs, quote unquote. Does not include them in the next four out group. So not official that Illinois will make the tourney, but a win over Michigan State last night, that does a lot for them. I think if they get maybe another win or two in the Big Ten tournament, you can put the Fighting Illini in that conversation. But a bad game for Michigan State, but I still do believe this team is in the tourney. Also, probably my favorite moment of last night, Isaac, is when Miles Bridges went out the game and Izzo, I don't know if you saw this moment, but Izzo is just giving it to Miles Bridges. Like, what in the world are you doing? Bleep here, bleep there. And then what is I've never seen a player use this tactic with Miles Bridges. Did you see what happened?
No, I didn't.
Miles gave Tom a hug to try and soften right when Izzo is reaming him. Miles is like, oh, my bad, coach. And then gives him this hug. It's on my Twitter for those that haven't seen it. Okay. He gives him a hug. And then you can read the lips of Tom Izzo. As soon as Miles gives him the hug, he kind of pulls back and you can read the lips. And then after Miles gives him the hug, what is Tom do? He's like, all right, man, give me a high five. And then Miles goes to the bench. It was a great moment last night. Probably my favorite moment of the night.
Love that. Yeah, it was a discouraging game, though, for MSU in some ways. For me, what I noticed was that there was no ball movement. A lot of the possession, it was Miles, see what he can do. Give it to Nick, see what he can do. Again, Nick only played 21 minutes in that game. Bridges had a good shot, but at the same time, 7 assists in that whole affair. You cannot win like that. You cannot get by like that. Or, excuse me, I think 9 assists. But the thing is, when you've got that many and then 15 turnovers coupled with it, Cassius Winston has had 9 assists by himself in some games. And when he does, they win it. When he doesn't, it's not to say they don't win it. But when the team is, as a whole, that productive or that unproductive in the assist category, you're not going to win. Going over to the Northwestern and Michigan side, Boy, I'll tell you, I've never seen so many teams that I think are deserving of 8 and 9 and 10 seeds in one conference. The Big Ten is just swarming with them this year. And Northwestern now, I think, elevates themselves into that position too. Michigan, I think, also is in that position as well. And I think when it comes to last game, the criticism for Beeline, in some ways it is justified. In no way should Derek Walton be the man covering right there. But at the same time, you know what? There was a lot of criticism swirling around the fact that he called a timeout right before that play. That's ridiculous. Northwestern called the first timeout. A classic strategy in the game of basketball is you want to see how the opponent lines up, how they prepare their set, their play, and then you adjust to it with a timeout of your own. That's what happened last night. So while it is easy to criticize Michigan for a few of their lapses last night, I think a lot of that criticism is unjustified. Hey, you know what? I mean, both those teams, MSU, maybe Illinois as well, all those guys are going to slide into the tournament at an 8 or 9 seed. That easy.
Yeah, and that's why, hence my SOS band, Take Your Time, Do It Right song. That's why that accompanied that bite, that game winner. Because, yeah, Northwestern took the time and did it right, right? I mean, it took the time out. Drawed up a great play, and boom, game over, right? Again, in to piggyback off your stat there, Isaac, MSU, look at the first half numbers alone. Michigan State, with only 3 assists on 11 field goals in the first half. Crazy, right? 27.3% to be exact. Michigan State, 9 turnovers on 33 possessions in the first half. Come on, dude. That's not winning basketball. You cannot win when you have just 3 assists on 11 field goals and that many turnovers. It's not winning basketball. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with our man, Deshaun Tate, college basketball producer, reporter, and host at CBS Radio down in the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. You know, I want to give a big shout out to a former mentor of mine back when I was a student at Michigan State University. I actually interned 2 years, as many of you know, at Channel 6 News my junior and senior year here on campus. And one of my big mentors at the time when I was there was not only Fred Heumann, not only Pat Thiede, but also Lisa Byington, who was in that second spot as a weekend reporter and anchor at Channel 6 News. Lisa has since gone on to do great things at the Big Ten Network. I'm just seeing this 2 hours ago on her Instagram being reported that Lisa Byington, my former mentor, I'm so happy for her, she will be working as a sideline reporter for CBS and Turner Sports. Guys, do we have any hand claps that we can roll in right now? Just a big hand. Oh, yeah. Lisa, congratulations. That is huge. I'm looking forward to seeing her do her thing. One of the best journalists I've ever seen in my life. And she's going to do a great job for CBS and Turner this month. And she actually posted the One Shining Moment Luther Vandross version song on her Instagram. That's probably her favorite song ever. So she's excited about it. I'm excited for her. That's a big move. So, Lisa, you're going to do a great job. Congratulations. Congratulations. All right. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527 is the number to call if you want to weigh in on anything that is on your sports noggin. And real briefly, another point I want to bring up briefly, Isaac, before we get to our guest for today's Current Sports. You brought up a great point about, you know, the Big Ten Conference having a lot of, you know, 8 and 9 possibilities, right, for this month in regards to the Big Dance. And, you know, it's so true. And, you know, I thought an interesting point was brought up on the broadcast last night. When you evaluate the success of Tom Izzo and just evaluating the Big Ten Conference, these teams know each other so well in the Big Ten Conference. That's why, you know, it's hard. It's so hard, let alone to get a read on Michigan State. The reason why it's so hard to get a read on Michigan State is because you're playing in the Big Ten where everybody knows each other. Everybody knows each other's style of play. Coaches know each other's philosophies and what they like to do. The familiarity is so through the roof that you get so much parity. That's why you get so much parity within the conference. So what happens when March comes? You play these crazy matchups where you don't know what the opposition looks like. And again, it's all about matchups when discussing the NCAA tournament. Again, Michigan State possibly playing, you know, according to Joe Lunardi, you know, if it were to start today, Michigan State would be playing Miami. Those teams are two different conferences. They don't know each other. A lot of the reason why Michigan State has been so successful in March and why time has been so successful is because, first off, he's so good at preparing in a confined one-week time span. Right, as opposed to, you know, having, you know, and again, in the NCAA tournament, you only have like a few days, what, like 1 or 2 days in between each game, right? He's so good at preparing for those matchups. A lot of coaches aren't. And also, you know, a lot of the teams who are playing Michigan State in March, you know, they don't know what Big Ten basketball is all about. So, you know, you have this conversation of unfamiliarity going on within Michigan State that it all comes down to how quickly you can get your guys ready for a game and how quickly your coaching staff can prepare. And Michigan State's coaching staff, with Tom Izzo, a Hall of Fame coach, you've got Dwayne Stevens, you got Dane Fife, you got Mike Garland. Those guys don't sleep. David Thomas is now in the coaching staff. Those guys know how to look at film, how to get the message across, and then Tom Izzo knows how to put the pieces in the right area. And that's what separates the good from the great coaches. Can you prepare with 1 or 2 days in between? That's why Tom Izzo is Mr. March.
Well, and the Big Ten's got so many of those guys, as you mentioned. It's great coach after great coach. The other thing about the system is it's physical. It's not a one-and-done academy either. That's more of the ACC style of play. You've got a lot of experience, a lot of tenure, a lot of veterans when it comes to Big Ten tournament and then the tournament itself. All those guys kind of know what to expect going into it. I think that could make a difference in this year's tournament. But it's always interesting to see, too, when a freshman team, a freshman predominant team, goes into the tournament from the Big Ten, how do they answer to that? Because this is abnormal when you're talking about Big Ten basketball. Is it going to be Purdue last year, bowing out in the first round with Caleb Swanigan and Isaac Haas, and you expected so much more from them, at least I did? Or is it going to be Michigan a few years back when they made the championship game with a team pretty much teaming with freshmen? Mm-hmm. It's one of those two extremes. So it's always interesting because that is an aberration for the Big Ten when you've got a lot of freshmen. But the continuity there is that you always have the experienced coaches, and they've been through this storm so many times. There are no teams really that are bottom feeders. You've got a few at the top always, but no teams that are bottom feeders. Big Ten's always solid.
Yeah, and again, you just never know. I mean, that's what makes the tournament so fun and exciting, because you just never know on any given night, right? Or any given day, I should say. One name, Giddy Potts. Where in the heck did that dude come from, right?
Exactly.
I mean, my goodness, you just never know. 517-355-WKAR. I also want to get your thoughts on one of the stories that we brought to you guys via our Quick Hit Headliners. If you haven't heard, but Minnesota head football coach, formerly of Western Michigan University, P.J. Fleck, under investigation for a potential violation of NCAA rules. Andy Pepper, sports director for WWMT-TV, Channel 3 and KZoo, reported that Western Michigan officials contacted Minnesota with concerns about Fleck's alleged contact with current WMU football players, as well as linebacker Robert Spillane. And if you, again, have been following this story, Spillane was granted a release from the program on Monday. The report also stated that the University of Minnesota began an investigation into the matter on Tuesday, and that officials checked the phones of Fleck and members of his coaching staff. NCAA rules prohibit any contact between a coach and a player from another school without prior written approval from the student athlete's home school. So this is a story that is gaining a lot of traction over time. Many folks are weighing in on it. I've seen a lot of tweets out there yesterday that were pretty nasty and ugly. You know, it's crazy. The world loves you when you're doing the right thing, right? But the moment there's a peek into, you know, any sort of, you know, any going against the grain, or are you messing up here, or breaking a rule here and there, oh, how quickly people turn on you. I mean, it was amazing just watching the dialogue of WMU fans and the student body, just like, oh, flex dirty. You know, it's amazing me. It just amazes me, Isaac, how quickly people turn on you, dude.
Yeah, I think it's time to acknowledge what he did for the program, first of all. And then, you know, if a lot of stuff comes out afterwards, that's fine. This really doesn't seem like it's that much to me.
It could be. I'm not saying that Fleck is innocent here by any means. I think that, again, it's a rule that you cannot have contact with any players from another school who are currently on the roster if you don't have written consent. That's a rule. You know, you're trying to go against the system here. If Fleck is found to have done this, he's guilty, and he's totally wrong. But, you know, at the same time, you can't ignore what he has done with this program, for what he's done for this program at Western Michigan for quite some time now. So we'll dive into that. I want to get your thoughts on that. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But I want to invite our guest for today's Current Sports. He's a dear friend of the show who I plan on having each and every Thursday as we embrace the madness of March, right? His name is Deshaun Tate. College basketball producer, reporter, and host at CBS Radio down in Atlanta. He's here to talk all things college hoops and to really give us a peek into the bigger picture of the bracket right now. Deshaun, what's up, my man? How you doing? And welcome to Current Sports.
Man, I'm outstanding. Whatever you do, Al, please don't hang up the phone on me, because I heard I got some snow up there. And we here in Atlanta working in 70 degrees area with not a cloud in the sky.
That is absolutely beautiful. You know, if I was there, man, after work, I'd be grabbing my golf clubs. But, yeah, Deshaun, it is ugly right now. I couldn't believe it when I woke up and saw snow on the grass. And it stuck, too. This stuff stuck last night. So, yeah, it's not that great up here. But, hey, I know you're enjoying it down there, and I want to get your thoughts on the college basketball world right now. I want to start, though, with the crazy night that was out in Illinois with Northwestern. A crazy, crazy play to end that game and to give the Wildcats a win over Michigan. Many people believe that that win solidifies the Wildcats a spot in this year's NCAA tourney. And then moments after that, of course, Michigan State and Illinois tipped off, and Illinois gets a big win over Sparty. How do you put those two games in perspective? And do you have NU in the tourney right now?
I definitely have Northwestern in the tournament right now. I'm so happy for them just to be able to get in it. I'm going to be honest. A lot of it is because of the fact that they are a Big Ten school. But even if they weren't, I do like to see the excitement of kids and just coaching staff. And, you know, when it comes to the school presidents, the whole nine, getting that opportunity to be able to get into the NCAA tournament for the first time, this is big. I mean, this is history for them. So, any program, I'd be really happy for that. That was a Power Six program and was able to get in. As far as what occurred last night with the game in Illinois, it's, you know, the last time we had talked was just before the game against Purdue, and I said they've got, five games left. Purdue, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Maryland. I predicted that they'd go 3-2. I said that likely that game against Purdue would be the game that I believe that they would be able to get. And it wasn't that one. It was flip-flop of Wisconsin. Now, however, I didn't believe that Illinois would be one of the teams that they would take a loss to. I think that they need this game against Maryland to kind of solidify themselves, getting some opportunity, some optimism, getting some confidence up underneath their belts and being able to move forward. We're getting into going into the Big Ten Conference, the conference tournament play. Now, that being said, they still have that opportunity to go 3-2. You were right on with talking about the preparation that Michigan State puts in going into the NCAA tournament, how hard that it is to prepare for them. I also want to add that the early scheduling of that you know, kind of a tough schedule in a non-conference actually helps them a lot moving forward, too. But when you're talking about this game against Illinois, you can't afford to turn the ball over 15 times. That seems like it's been the Achilles heel of Michigan State all season. And if you do turn the ball over 15 times, because it can be worse. We've seen Tom Izzo teams go into 20-something odd turnovers in a game. But if you're going to turn the ball over 15 times, Al, you got to force Illinois to turn it over more than just 7 times. So they didn't shoot a terrible game. I don't think 48% from the field is pretty darn good. But they've kind of got to get back to the same old Michigan State that they used to be with stifling defense and rebounding.
Let's talk bracketology right now, Deshaun. If the season were to end today, who are your top 4 1 seeds heading into March Madness?
I'm going to go probably the overall number 1 seed if it started today. Main reason because they've won their 13th consecutive regular season championship, and that would be Kansas. On the outside of that, I'd probably slate Gonzaga in there right along with the defending national champs in Villanova. And then I know a lot of people have been talking about Carolina, more or less the fact before Carolina took their most recent loss to Virginia earlier this week. But I still was thinking that Pac-12 basketball is coming back around. I think the top dog in the Pac-12 conference right now is UCLA, and whoever comes out of that conference deserves to be the last number 1 seed to get in.
Who's the weakest of those 4, Deshaun? Kansas, Nova, Gonzaga, or Carolina?
Let me think real hard about that one.
Yeah, it's tough, right?
It's Gonzaga, and I think it's pretty clear cut. I mean, what they showed us on senior night against BYU. I remember to tell you that that's the same BYU team that earlier this season lost to Utah Valley. Now, I know that it seems like either St. Mary's or BYU has had Gonzaga's number for the last few years, but I still think that Gonzaga is the weakest team of all those number 1 seeds because I think they're going to have some issues when they play some top talent and some talent that can get up and down the floor and transition well versus what Gonzaga likes to do, which is obviously to set up in a half-court offense.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Deshaun Tate, college basketball producer, reporter, and host at CBS Radio down in Atlanta. Deshaun, are there any – with that being said, because you just gave us your top 4 number 1 seeds right now, are there any teams that you're really zoned in on right now that are just on that fringe of possibly making the tournament that you think will surprise a lot of people?
I don't know how much it would actually – surprise, but I do believe that North Carolina is right there. I mean, the thing that North Carolina has going for themselves is that they are they are playing in the toughest conference in the country, and that may be kind of hard to say sometimes. I think they have the best teams in the conference, but a lot of them beat up on each other the same way in comparison to probably how the SEC does in football. So they are that team that's right there on the cusp of becoming the number 1 seed. And I put UCLA in there as their number 1 seed because I think that they are top to bottom for the most part, the best team in the Pac-12. But right behind them is a very, very good Oregon team. Now, I don't want to ruffle any feathers with anybody that's listening that may come from different regional spots around the United States. But I think that, in my own personal opinion, Pac-12 basketball has typically, for the most part, been a little more on the softer side. I see a lot of that in Arizona. I also see a lot of that in UCLA. I don't see that same thing in a team like Oregon, who I think is the toughest team out there on the West Coast. I also believe that they have the talent to maybe make a Final Four run to get a number 1 seed. But the biggest issue there in that on the West Coast in the Pac-12 is coaching. I'm not sure that I am quite a believer in Dana Altman nor the head coach over there at Arizona, and the same thing goes for Steve Alford over there in UCLA.
Certainly, and you know, I've been looking at the bracket of Joe Lunardi. I brought it up a few times throughout the show, Deshaun. And you know, what was interesting to me is, I mean, you look at Michigan State, you look at Michigan. Those are two teams that a lot of people are going to be in the NCAA tournament. But
no, another.
What's that?
nine seeds.
Yeah, nine seeds, exactly. Right now, again, as I mentioned, Michigan State, according to Joe Lunardi's bracket, Michigan State will play Miami in Buffalo, the 8 and 9 seed matchup there, and then Michigan versus South Carolina in the Midwest section of the bracket for, again, the Wolverines. And you look at a team like Oakland, and again, Greg Campy leading the Oakland Grizzlies to the Horizon League Championship. I mean, an emotional moment for Greg and his squad. You know, you saw Campy in tears and you know, after they got that win and were able to claim themselves as the conference champion. It's so cool, though, because, you see Oakland, and right now, according to Joe Lunardi, Oakland will be a 15 seed. Just out of those three teams right now, who do you think has the best chance of possibly making it to a Sweet 16 or an Elite Eight? I'm not even talking Final Four here just yet. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
I think that team, honestly, as crazy as it may seem to some people, I think that team is Michigan State.
Really?
When you're looking at it, I think that Miami is very youthful. They do play a very tough conference schedule. I think that they are youthful, but we're not talking about going up against. I didn't see who Michigan would have played in that first round. I know Oakland would have Louisville in that situation, but do you have it right there?
Yeah, South Carolina will be that matchup. Michigan and South Carolina, according to Joe.
It may be neck and neck between Michigan and Michigan State, because we're talking about Michigan drawing Kansas if they're able to get out of the first round, and Michigan State drawing Villanova if they're able to get out of the first round. So from that standpoint, I like to think that it's Michigan State, because Michigan State matches up. Forget about all this defending national championship and all the hype that comes around Villanova. I think that it is a very good matchup for Michigan State and what they're able to put together, in addition to what I mentioned earlier about the early season scheduling. So they're used to seeing and being able to prepare for the type of team of the caliber of Villanova, where I don't think nearly as much for Oakland and or the University of Michigan following the first round. We're talking about a very tough Kansas team that I think if it's not UCLA, it's 1A and 1B, UCLA and Kansas, the top two teams in the country by far, in my opinion.
Next week, Deshaun, we talk conference tourneys. So, again, with a few days left here in the regular season, college basketball regular season, I just briefly want to get your thoughts on if you had a vote to give when it comes to National Player of the Year and Coach of the Year, who would you give those two awards to and why?
I'd probably go ahead and give it to who I feel deserves it. You know, I think that Frank Mason is the player of the year, the consensus right now player of the year. As far as from a coaching standpoint, coach of the year, I think that's one that's a little bit tougher, because you do have some programs. I mean, Jay Wright has done a phenomenal job disregarding, you know, the two losses. He got swept by Butler this year. But I'm not sure that Mark Few has really done enough, especially with that one loss. Could it be Gonzaga? Possibly. But then we could be making that case for Gonzaga almost every year, because they've been doing the same thing as of late, which is only, you know, losing a couple games and then falling flat on their face within the NCAA tournament in the Big Dance. So if you're leaving the Big Dance out and you're just looking at resume-wise, I'd probably say it would go to Jay Wright. Just thinking right off the top of my head, I mean, they held down the number one spot and been right there in the top three the entire season, all the way through and through. I mean, they just took a loss to Butler, and they're still number two team in the country ranked. So I think that a lot of that does have to do with the fact that they are the defending national champions, but they are just that strong of a team with the help of Josh Hart and company.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at Wright, I mean, he was expecting to have a national title game MVP, Phil Booth, and five-star post player Omari Spellman in that conversation as well. But Booth injured, played just three games. Spellman declared ineligible for the season, and what Jay Wright has been able to do in spite of that has been remarkable. And also, thoughts on Alonzo Ball. He's been in the news. Actually, his dad has been in the news a lot, saying that, hey, I want my son to play for the Lakers. All this mess about that. Alonzo has had a great season at UCLA. What makes him a special player, Deshaun?
The fact that he can do a little bit of everything. He rebounds the ball fairly well. I mean, he's a 6'6 guard. They're right on point with these comparisons about Jason Kidd. And I'm very careful when I make comparisons to guys to guys that are in the league or former NBA players, but he just looks like Jason Kidd out there, to be realistic with you.
Yeah.
He has a high IQ. He distributes the ball well. Everybody talks about how funky his basketball, his jump shot looks. But at the end of the day, I don't think that's something you want to change. I mean, if the ball's going inside of the basket, I don't care if you kick it off your shoe and it goes in. I mean, as long as the thing goes in the basket and inside of the cylinder and the goal, then I think that you don't really have nothing to worry about. But I think more or less, more than anything, is that the fact that he's a winner, he seems like a good kid, his IQ is through the roof, and he has an awesome ceiling ahead of him looking forward to the NBA draft. So I think those are some of the biggest things. He's probably he's not as much of a project as you see a lot of other guys who former number one picks going into the NBA draft. And you have some really good talent entering the NBA draft along with Lonzo Ball. You know, when you're talking about Markel Fultz and Josh Jackson, a few other guys, well, Dennis Smith Jr. amongst others. But I think right now, as far as the number one spot, his dad, I don't know how much his dad is really helping that situation. He's doing a phenomenal job going after that number one pick.
Yeah, I was about to say, your pop should have just kept his mouth shut, right? I mean, coming out and saying, hey, Lakers, purple and gold, my son will play for you. That's kind of that's jumping the ball a little bit, right?
Yeah, and when you start mentioning, you know, why can't my son be better than Michael Jordan? And you say, right, hey, you know, put Stephen Curry on this team and put my son on the Golden State Warriors and all that kind of stuff. That's where you kind of have to draw the line. But in the same token, I do want to give credit, you know, to his dad, because we're talking about a guy whose father is actually in his life. And you don't hear that very often anymore in this day of age. You know, we're talking to a guy who, you know, and myself, who knows who my dad is personally, and I've definitely got some support within the last few years, but didn't grow up to be that close and didn't get as much support as other guys. So a guy who is going to bat for his son and trying to do any and everything to get probably publicity more for his son more than anything over the other guys that I just previously mentioned, I got to take my cap off to him. Maybe for his dad for that only that part, but I give him credit for being there and trying to push his son the best way he possibly can.
Deshaun, thanks for joining me this afternoon, brother. You take care, all right? Great insight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Al.
All right. We are out of time, folks. 20 seconds left in the show. Time flies. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Much thanks to Tate for joining us on today's Current Sports and breaking down college hoops. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. Take care and be easy, people.